everyone. It's Fridays at the Damage Report, but not just any Friday. We have flipped the week on its head and given you a fantastic Friday. That actually kind of sounds right, Francesca. Oh, Francesca's here. How's it going, Francesca?
It does. Yeah. Hi. What's up, everybody? What up? What up? What up? I missed you, but I had to take Monday off because when you're unemployed, you could take any day off. That's my song. What's going on, John?
That's why she took the day off, was to write that song. By the way, I love your coordination between your outfit and your lighting, your cool gamer lighting.
Absolutely.
Nice. Well, it's very exciting to have you here. I announced on Monday that you'd be doing Friday, but somewhere between then and yesterday, I forgot. And it's been a stressful week. There's been a lot going on, and some people are easier to do the show with, you know, than others necessarily. And when I looked at it and I saw Francesca, I was like, oh, good.
Oh, okay. That'll be good. Could have gone either way.
Dear God, no. Anyway. But very glad to have you here. I think that I've got some topics that you're going to be interested in. Some serious substantive topics, some that have to do with candy and people's genitals. So that'll be fun, but it somehow has something to do with the news. I'm told by the biggest cable news show in the world, as well as our garbage people of the week. So I believe for the first time, Francesca, you're going to be doing this. You've never done it before, right?
I don't do trash usually. I stay far away from toxic people, just trash in general. I don't do trash day. Like, yeah, that's my boyfriend's job. I do dishes, you know.
That is okay. That's true. Well, I've got mine, and many of you have voted. We're going to find out how many. There's still time, by the way, on the community tab over at YouTube. You can go vote. You can do it. You might like it. And early heads up, I'm going to be as vague as Francesca implies non-verbally I should be, but. On the power panel later on today, I will of course be leading the first hour. Cenk is away. You know why he's away though? That's because he's getting ready for the economic justice town hall happening in Cleveland this Saturday. There's still a chance for you to become an audience member if you go to tyt.com/events. Tickets are $3, but that is not really a fee. It is a donation that will then be provided to Rock the Vote. Killer Mike is going to be there. Senator Turner is going to be there. And also Cenk Uygur is going to be there. So it should be a lot of fun. Everybody go check that out. But I will be doing the first hour of the power panel with, I believe it's with David Schuster, yes, and Adrian Lawrence. So that's going to be awesome. And maybe someone else on the show right now might be doing the second hour. I'm not sure. But Wazi Lambre is going to be there and Jackson White of Politiscope as well. So
yes, yeah, stay tuned.
Have fun. Stay tuned.
I think I'm doing the second hour. Depending on, I don't know if I can get over to the studio in time. If not, I might be from like a crappy. Anyway, stay tuned. Whatever. Second hour. Be there.
Broadcasting from a mid-90s iMac.
Yes.
We'll be no. Anyway.
Yes.
But it should be a lot of fun. But that said, we've got a lot to get to. So much news. Some would say, including my production team, way too much news. Why did we produce all this news? And if we're gonna produce all this news, why are you wasting so much time with this intro? All good points. I'll agree to that. But anyway, so with that, we're gonna get into the news. Let's talk about some news, everybody. No, I really am ready. We can do this. Okay. We have got our bipartisan infrastructure bill. And now today, we did the breaking news yesterday. Now today we have a little bit more news about how it's likely to proceed. What is likely to be in it? Is it going to happen at all? Let's find out. Well, I will remind you that while the initial details of this bipartisan package, I would put in the category of bleh, supposedly that's not going to be it. That's not going to be everything. There's going to be this reconciliation bill that's going to have stuff having to do with the climate and elder care. Everybody's going to get puppies. Just put all of your hopes and aspirations into that and assume that everything's going to go okay. And supposedly, if we don't get that, we don't get anything. According to people like Nancy Pelosi, who said hours before the deal was announced, there ain't going to be an infrastructure bill unless we have the reconciliation bill passed by the United States Senate. And President Joe Biden said, if this is the only thing that comes to me, speaking of the bipartisan bill, I'm not signing it. It's in tandem. And he is a man who has definitely ridden a tandem bicycle. So I'm pretty sure he knows what that means. Probably on the beach, red and white stripes. You get the idea. So anyway, what's actually in the bipartisan plan? Well, under the plan, $312 billion would go to transportation projects, $65 billion to broadband, $55 billion to waterways, $47 billion is earmarked for resilience, a down payment on Mr. Biden's promise to deal with the impact of climate change. I know you probably want more specificity than that. We don't really have it though. All I have is what Jeff Stein at the Washington Post has about specifically what might have to do with climate change in that first bill. They have $7.5 billion for EV stations, which is at least less than half of what he had previously announced. And if not far more than that, he's talking about building like 500,000 stations. Anyway, $7.5 billion for electric buses, $21 billion for environmental remediation, $73 billion for the power infrastructure, and then the aforementioned resilience. So that's what's in it. We'll get to when this is supposed to happen. But so far, scale of 1 to 10, Francesca, how excited are you?
3.
We got 3.
I got an infrastructure bill. Yay. Can I have kids now? Oh no, can I buy a house? Oh no, am I still gonna die in a fire? Probably. Oh, cool.
Be resilient, there's money in it.
I'll be resilient, it'll take longer for me to burn. I'm being so grim on a Friday. Speaking of grim, I actually was watching a man named Ryan Grimm speaking about the infrastructure bill. And one of the interesting things specifically about where the money comes from and how to pay for some of these things and how Republicans like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who are, you know, parading as Democrats, how they went along with this is that the spending wasn't, you know, it didn't raise a lot of taxes on wealthy people. And in fact, one of the line items, which is I think EV buses, that's gonna be paid for by selling oil. So what are we, literally
is it olive oil?
Yeah, oh John, canola. There you go with your beautiful little heart and your spirit and your wishful thinking. No. This is like, we're just eating our own tails. We are that like snake eating our tail when it comes to climate change. Yeah, we'll just sell all the oil and then we can pay for climate resilience. Kill me.
Yeah, not a lot of references to the Ouroboros on the show lately. Anyway, yeah, I agree. And like, if there's a chance, hold on, are you sure that what Francesca just said, selling oil to pay for the buses, might not end up being the best way they're paying for portions of this? I'm not sure at this point. But you know what we can be pretty sure about? The timeline, supposedly. So here is how this is supposed to go. I know when something this good is announced, you just want it now. You don't want to have to wait. So you will have to wait though. The Senate is going to turn the bipartisan agreement into legislative text in the coming days so it can pass out of the chamber in July. So it's not actually text right now. They're going to turn it into an actual bill and next month they're going to actually pass it. The House will have its own version, but instead of conferencing and approving a combined bill for Biden's signature before the August recess, leaders will put infrastructure on ice until the Democrats only bill catches up. That's part of Pelosi's plan, which by the way, I'm not saying that nobody else had this idea. But I remember AOC saying we should hold it in the House until both are there. Mm. And then everybody just moved on. It's like Nancy Pelosi, amazing strategy. I think you got that from AOC. But anyway, so what else is gonna happen? Well, Schumer and Pelosi plan to have both their chambers pass their respective budget resolutions before the August resolution, enabling Democrats to unlock the fast tracking reconciliation tool. Fast is very much in quotes there. That budget will include instructions for each committee to tackle everything from corporate tax hikes to climate change, education, paid family leave and the like. In other words, everything Democrats want that's not in this first bit. The panels will work over the August recess to draft the massive reconciliation bill, which Senator Bernie Sanders hopes will top $6 trillion. Then when lawmakers return in September after the August recess, they'll have a few weeks to clear both bills at the same time. The new deadline for getting both to Biden's desk per Democratic leaders is September 30th, when a bunch of surface transportation programs expire and would need resumed funding. So supposedly we've got July, August and September. By the end of 3 months from now, they'll be done. Of course, bearing in mind that they take a recess in the middle of that. I don't know, maybe get it done and then go to the recess.
Well, we've got to go to the Cape. You know, it's wonderful. It's oyster season in the Cape right now. So it ain't going to be done without reconciliation. But mama's got to have her oysters and cocktail sauce, you know, and with all of my 28 grandchildren. And yes, I am trying to do a Nancy Pelosi.
I didn't know who that was. I thought it was Cruella, but I did like it.
It was a Feinstein Pelosi, like there was a little bit of who's the other old, very oldest time? They're all oldest time. The point is, it was the generalized senator that needs to, you know, again, go, you know, take naps at 3 PM because they're all, you know, octogenarians. But look, I hope this happens. You know, I'm very incredibly skeptical that even this bipartisan bill would pass. AOC called it out absolutely right, unrepresentative in terms of who you can just see, you know, the mayonnaise oozing through that, you know, the presentation of this bipartisan bill, very white crew. But I do hope that it passes, and I do hope it is not filibustered by Republicans, and I do hope that then reconciliation passes by a simple majority. Like, I am not a cynical lefty to the point where I'm like, no, we should stop progress because then we'll get the real progress. I actually think that's BS. But, you know, am I hopeful? I don't know. I want to see it to believe it. And yes, we've got way too much time for there to be more shenanigans and more politicking and more Republicans turning against any kind of bipartisanship. And Mitch McConnell, you know, once he is well rested, he then wants to block things. I feel like he's tired now, which is why he might be more amenable to this.
Maybe. So first of all, you may not have realized that you were lobbing a grenade there with your sullying the good name of 3 p.m. naps. You might want to think twice about that. But this timeline that we've, I just realized I credited all these things as coming from politic rather than Politico. So this is, okay, we do this, we have 3 weeks. Okay, we turn it into a bill, then we pass it, then we break, everybody break. And then we're gonna start working on this. We're gonna put everything in. And when we have our version, we'll pass it because nobody will have a problem with it or anything. And then we're gonna be good and we can pass everything. Wait, so under the best case scenario, 3 months. Doesn't Manchin still, he's still alive, right? And Sinema's still alive and there's Republicans with their shenanigans. I have a feeling this might not go in the timeline that they're saying that it will. And if it doesn't, this is already taking us to September 30th. Their next recess is probably like a day and a half after that. And then like, do you know how bad members of the media and politicians want to be like, well, it's the midterms, can't work here.
Yep.
Like they're so desperate for it. They're going to be doing it before September 30th, let alone after. So this timeline is fairly horrifying, I think. And that's not even getting into what we're going to talk about in just a second, which is the fundamental issue with all this strategy. But yeah, the timeline is really something here.
Yeah, you're so right about the media. They're just like such a fickle partner. They're like, why won't you work together? Why won't you work together? And then it's like, why are you working together? Why are you working together? They want the drama and whatever, like discord is what they feed off of. So you're totally right. I hope, right, because in order to do the budget reconciliation, you gotta get Manchin and Sinema on board. And I know Manchin has in theory said, I mean, look, he said a lot of things, but he said that he's in favor of climate preparedness, of really, you know, moving on these big pieces that are gonna, you know, ensure that his state, especially also, you know, we're talking just transition, we're talking about money for green energy, which will help West Virginia. But are they getting their name written in like writing and blood and all the other, like what are they holding onto their keys? Are they holding onto their ID until September? Like what are they leveraging on Manchin and Sinema to ensure that come September, they're gonna vote for this reconciliation bill because that's how it's gonna pass.
Yeah, and by the way, we're throwing up those quotes of like, Pelosi's like, not without the reconciliation bill. And Biden's like, I'm not just signing this. Okay, let's see. Remember those graphics, because they might have to come up again when things start to, when the goalposts start racing down I-10. But anyway, let's turn to the next issue with this. When we found out yesterday that there was going to be this bipartisan bill, a lot of people responded with, oh, well, okay, this is bad potentially, but the reason it's bad is that the bill won't be very good. And I sort of questioned in that first video, is that the only way that this is bad? Because people are sort of taking it for granted that the bipartisan bill means that it can pass at all. They have 5 Republicans on board. First of all, let's not assume that those 5 Republicans are actually gonna vote for it. But even if they do, you still need at least 5 other Republicans. And that's assuming that none of the Democrats actually jump ship on this thing.
Right.
Like there was a meme that I spread on Instagram. It's the, you know, the classic now Star Wars one of like, they have a bipartisan bill. So you're gonna vote for it, right? You're gonna vote for it, right? Why are people assuming that? And by the way, it took much less than 24 hours to start to really question that. So Senator Lindsey Graham told Politico yesterday that he will not support the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure deal that President Biden struck with 10 senators after Biden and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi demanded it be passed alongside a budget resolution with key Democratic priorities. Now, I'm not gonna pull the clip from yesterday where I said that would be the excuse because we're not generally that sort of show. But yeah, why would they sign on to this if that is the thing that lets the reconciliation bill do the stuff they don't wanna do? I think they're gonna see through that as a strategy. And indeed, Senator Lindsey Graham has apparently still put together enough to do that. And he had this to say, if he's gonna tie them together, he can forget it. I'm not doing that, that's extortion. I'm not going to do that. The Dems are being told you can't get your bipartisan work.
It's a little softer than that.
It's not, I know, it's not a good one. Passed unless you sign on to what the left wants, and I'm not playing that game. I'm playing a different game and it sucks. He also added that most Republicans could not have known that Biden also planned to request a multi-trillion-dollar budget resolution, which will likely include blah blah blah. Wait, no, this is not new. They've been talking about that. What do you mean? He says there's no way. You look like an effing idiot now. I don't mind bipartisanship, but I'm not going to do a suicide mission. And Mitch McConnell also said, no, we're not gonna do this. They're pulling the rug out from under the bipartisan reaction. So, but like they said all that stuff and everyone's still like, oh, you know, we have a bipartisan thing. What are you talking about? You just already lost at least 2 Republicans. Francesca, well, do you think it's gonna happen? Is this just a negotiating tactic?
I mean, look, the season of lobbying has begun. So if billionaires and different corporations can offer, you know, these senators a even cushier landing pad when they leave the dumpster fire of Congress that they've created, then maybe we'll see. Maybe, I mean, you know, who knows? Remember how Joe Manchin was asking that coalition or that like whatever billionaire think tank to basically give money to Senator Roy Blunt, like, hey, give him, help him out so he'll vote for the January 6th commission. Well, that failed, but we'll see. Look, I mean, again, it's lobbying, and it's lobbying from the people as well, and some of the people who helped shape and craft and pushed for a lot of the things that were in this reconciliation bill too. Things like home care workers, domestic workers, United is one of the, I believe, one of those organizations. You know, there are good people who've worked on this infrastructure bill as well. It's not just been bastardized, but we have to make sure that it doesn't get watered down. So it's gonna be a season of a lot of pressure, I believe.
We'll see. It was bad if you assume that none of these obvious things are gonna happen. Once you put those in, like, maybe it's just a negotiating tactic. Maybe it's just a waste time. It's almost certainly just a waste time.
Yes.
And the Republicans are gonna be trying to waste time, and some of the Democrats are gonna be trying to waste time, and it's just gonna drag it out and drag it out and drag it out, and it's gonna be Easter, and we're gonna be like, hey, remember Infrastructure Week? That was fun. Anyway, we are gonna take our first break. When we come back though, the books are coming for Donald Trump's legacy, and it's about to get even darker than earlier this week after this. Okay, let's jump back into the news. You might think you're capped out on knowledge of all the awful things that Donald Trump said and did and tried to do as president, but there's more books coming out, which means more revelations from inside of his first term. Should have said only term, now I've scared myself. So the upcoming book, Frankly, We Did Win This Election, The Inside Story of How Trump Lost, Reveals new details about how Trump's language became increasingly violent during Oval Office meetings as protests in Seattle and Portland began to receive attention from cable news outlets. The president would highlight videos that showed law enforcement getting physical with protesters and tell his administration he wanted to see more of that behavior, the excerpts show. Now, that's sort of vague. And so you might think, well, sure, we know that he's a violent guy. Now, it got much more specific and much more violent. He says, that's how you're supposed to handle these people, crack their skulls. And he's speaking not just with like Stephen Miller and like trying to help him get excited for later that night or something with talks of violating the rights of civil rights protesters. No, he's talking with his top law enforcement and military officials, saying this is what you should do when you go out there. But it didn't stop there. He tells them he wants the military to go in and beat the F out of the civil rights protesters. And that is bad, but you know what's worse? Just shoot them. He apparently said on multiple occasions inside the Oval Office, when General Milley, who's been in the news recently, and then Attorney General William Barr would push back, Trump toned it down, but only slightly, saying, well, shoot them in the leg or maybe the foot, but be hard on them. So murder them for protesting. Okay, I guess I can't murder them. Shoot them in the leg, which I believe is exactly how he spoke about people trying to cross the border with Mexico. So it seems consistent with that. But Francesca, I don't know, any surprise that he was calling for the murder of protesters? We sort of suspected that, but this is the most clear example of it I've seen.
I don't think it's surprising that he was calling for murdering protesters. I think it's surprising that a general, a US military general, had to be the one to be like, no, no. See, look, I am for overturning democratic elections in Latin America, but this is a bridge too far. Like, it's incredible that you see, and I say that ironically, but I'm actually serious, that like the shades of, you know, terrible, and you know, the shades of like those who are in power who need to be doing better are important to distinguish here. And in this case, yeah, this general also said, look, the Black Lives Matter movement is exactly that. It's a civil rights movement. It is not a military situation. Ergo, stop, don't open fire on people. And then the other thing I'll say to this, when I saw it, I was like, well, they did open fire on people. They didn't use live ammunition, but they opened fired on like massive amounts of tear gas, massive amounts of rubber bullets, the incredible brutality that we saw. Imagine looking at all of that and going, no more. I think we saw it, buddy. I think we had enough.
Yeah, let alone all the cops like crashing cars into people and legislatures trying to make it so that other people could do that, that they could drive into crowds and all of that. Yeah, we saw all of that. I mean, we saw, like, remember when he said those thugs are dishonoring the memory of George Floyd. Thugs was capitalized. And I won't let that happen. Just spoke to Governor Tim Walz and told him that the military is with him all the way. Any difficulty and we will assume control, but when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Yep. Thank you. And then they tried to pretend that he was just saying, well, somebody will be shooting. I'm not saying we should shoot, even though I'm in the Oval Office all day, every night, telling people we need to be shooting them. And look, thankfully, I guess there were people, always people around to stop some of the worst things. I mean, I'm not going to give Barr a bunch of credit, or even Milley, honestly, although he seems to have been beneficial in stopping some of that, including fighting back against Trump's desire to invoke the Insurrection Act, which, remember, right-wing media was calling for, senators, I believe Tom Cotton was calling for that. Trump desperately wanted to do it. They didn't do it, thankfully, apparently in part because there was at least some pushback. But there was still a lot of violation of civil rights and violence. I mean, remember when random Kia minivans were rolling up in various streets and just taking people away? Just snatching them off the street. You have no idea who they are, who they report to. That was a fun time.
No, and I think it also is it is very much a, what's the right word, where you, it's like foreshadowing. Oh, there we go. Franny's brain worked. This is a foreshadowing for if there is another Trump presidency, or if there's someone like Trump, a Trump 2.0. We're gonna see the Insurrection Act invoked at the drop of a hat. We're going to see, because remember, the lesson that a lot of Republicans, i.e. fascists, took away from the 2020, whether it was the BLM movement, whether it was the election, was we were not tough enough. Yeah. We didn't fight enough. We didn't invoke martial law. We didn't, you know, we didn't stop this with brute force, right? We didn't join the insurrectionists on January 6th. Next time, senators and congresspeople are joining. I mean, they already kind of were. But yeah. So it is really important to know, like, look, yeah, again, Milley, I'm not gonna say he's the hero, but anyone putting a little bit of reins on this guy, it's important to understand. Exactly, yeah. Potentially saved a lot of lives. And let's be real, the best part of this article is that General Milley told Stephen Miller to shut the F up. And I just, like, I want to relive my life in that moment over and over and over again. Just like if I could tell him to his face to shut the F up, oh, it would feel so good.
Oh, that would be nice. I'd pay. Maybe someday on, like, if he, when he ends up on Cameo or something.
Or did he have VR anyway, or something? You know, anyway.
That would be fun. Yeah. Okay, I want to give an example of this though. So upcoming book describes how Trump was telling the military and law enforcement to murder civil rights protesters. I understand that for a lot of people, that's not going to be super shocking. For others, Trump fans, they're going to say that it's not true because it's just multiple sources, which has never stopped them from believing things in the past. And also, let's bear in mind, they don't care because they also support it. But the fact that it was behind closed doors, it's not 100% true that it was just there. I want to remind people of an incident that happened last year that some people might have forgotten about. And it involved a man named Michael Reinhold. So he had been suspected of murdering a Trump supporter at one of these protests and then had fled the scene. And so people were trying to find him. And I want to remind you of what happened when they did. So on September 3rd, about 120 miles north of Portland, Mr. Reinhold was getting into his Volkswagen station wagon when a pair of unmarked sport utility vehicles roared through the quiet streets, screeched to a halt just in front of his bumper. Members of a US Marshals task force jumped out and unleashed a hail of bullets that shattered windows, whizzed past bystanders, and left him dead in the street. Attorney General William Barr trumpeted the operation as a significant accomplishment that removed a violent agitator. The officers had opened fire, he said, when Mr. Reinhold attempted to escape arrest and produced a firearm during the encounter. There's a bit of an issue with that though. And that's that in interviews with 22 people who were near the scene, all but one said they didn't hear officers identify themselves or give any commands before opening fire. One, Mr. Lewis, said there was no get out of the car, there was no stop, there was no nothing. They just got out of the car and started shooting. Mr. Smith said there was no yelling, there was no screaming, there was no altercation. It was just straight to gunshots. Five eyewitnesses said in interviews that the gunfire began the instant the vehicles arrived. None of them saw Michael Reinhold holding a weapon. A single shell casing of the same caliber as the handgun he was carrying was found inside the car, although an investigation couldn't show whether it had been fired that day or not. And it seems like a moot point because the gun that he had on him had a full clip at the time that he died. It was full afterward. He hadn't fired any shots. And so how did Donald Trump respond to this? To give you an idea of his thought process, we don't have to go behind closed doors. He said in this case, this guy was a violent criminal and the US Marshals killed him. And I will tell you something, that's the way it has to be. There has to be retribution when you have crime like this. Not justice or anything like that. No taking him alive like you would with like a white terrorist or something like that. There needs to be retribution. You pull up, you immediately begin firing and you kill him. And that's what they did.
And he was white, right? I mean, you're saying like an actual white supremacist terrorist.
Believed to be a leftist.
Exactly. And which is why he was executed, just completely executed, like Saudi Arabia style execution, no justice, no day in court, no nothing. Not even charged, not even, no apprehended, no Burger King. You know, because he didn't kill 9 black parishioners, right? He killed a Trump supporter, not a police officer, not a US Marshal. Oh no, because he's not a Boogaloo boy, right? Has that guy been executed? No, it's only because he killed a Trump supporter. And yes, it's bad, no one is condoning that, but the guy deserved his day in court. And it's chilling, It's again, it's Duterte chilling. Yeah, and I'm glad exactly that you, I'm really glad that you that you read us all of that, and that we really need to remember Reinhold's case every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not a defense. I don't know this person. And if they did do the thing that they're suspected or alleged to have done, then they should have spent the rest of their life in jail. But he didn't. And Trump didn't say, you know what, this guy was a suspected violent criminal, and one way or another, we had to stop him from hurting other people. No, he said, this is how it should be. They didn't make a mistake. It's not regrettable that they didn't bring him in. I want you to gun them down in the streets. That's what he said. Yeah. That's who he is. He defended it later on. I'm not gonna read more of the quotes, but he considered this to be a great thing. It became an applause line at his rallies, saying, no, we should be killing these people where they stand. One of the looming crises throughout the pandemic and up until right now has been the eviction and foreclosure crisis that's been coming. People have lost their jobs. They haven't been able to pay for their rent. They haven't been able to make mortgage payments. And thankfully, for a year, depending on where you live in the country, some areas have been better than others. You have been protected. Not everyone has, and we'll get into that. But it has been every day we get closer to the end of that period. And when it ends, people are going to have to pay off a lot of accumulated rent and mortgage payments. And since they didn't have jobs, that's gonna be quite difficult to do. And so people have been pushing for it to be extended. It was extended earlier in March, and now it has been extended again, but not for a very long time. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, the head of the CDC, said that the eviction moratorium will be extended until July 31st, and that this move is intended to be the final extension. So you get 1 month more, and then that's going to be it. Ahead of that, a group of 44 Democratic House lawmakers led by Ayanna Pressley, Jimmy Gomez, and Cory Bush sent a letter to Biden and Walensky urging them to strengthen and extend the moratorium, saying the impact of the federal moratorium cannot be overstated, and the need to strengthen and extend it is an urgent matter of health, racial, and economic justice. But they're saying, at least right now, no, it's final, that's it. You get one more month, and then God help you. I have no clue what's gonna happen at that point, Francesca.
It's so easy. It's so, I mean, we see the path in front of us in terms of how to, you don't even have to pass new legislation. It's the same thing with, you know, canceling student debt. Just don't do the bad thing. Just stave off the worst of the worst. And we saw, you know, that through direct payments, and yes, under Donald Trump and also under Joe Biden, that direct payments to Americans saved 10 million people from going into poverty, right? And maybe saved them from living on the streets. And so, again, this is just like, we can see it's so bloody clear what we need to do to stop the worst of the worst, to stop people from living on the streets, to stop people from, you know, being evicted from their homes, and yet we're not willing to do it. And all it takes, yeah. I mean, we're not asking for like another year of an eviction moratorium, although, hey, I mean, I am, that'd be tight. But like, but at least even 3 to 4 more months, at least what about throughout the year 2021, which is arguably, I think, harder for a lot of people to re-enter in this year. Whereas like 2020, you had unemployment benefits, right? Now all of those unemployment benefits across the country are ending. Yep. And yet the jobs aren't necessarily there. And certainly if they're there, they're not there paying what they should be, right? And that, you know, you heard Republicans screeching about this. Why are we paying more money for people to stay home? Well, that money saved people from, you know, potential eviction. It saved people from living on the streets. And yeah. So now what has actually changed? Right, the wages aren't better. You guys made sure the wages weren't better. So how are people?
So what has actually changed? Well, yeah, and look, people in the audience are asking the same thing. I'm trying to find the comment again. Oh, so Olivia says, what does putting it off another month do for them? Well, look, devil's advocate, they'll say it gives you a month to try desperately to scrape together the money to pay off the debt that you've accrued. Good luck with that. It's also another month potentially for some of the earlier COVID aid to be administered, because apparently while they gave $46 billion earlier this year in emergency rental assistance, it's been slow in getting into the hands of the people that it was designed to be to given to. Right. The National Low Income Housing Coalition reports that in some states, less than 5% of the funds have been distributed so far. So like in theory, there's help coming for some people, at least some help, but they don't actually have it. I hope that month is enough time for them to actually get it. We'll see. I don't know. I know that, look, the conversation has been focused on a moratorium on foreclosures and evictions. That is not the only solution, though. Here's a wild idea. Get rid of the debt. I understand, oh, it's socialism or whatever. Okay, well, you can put off the apocalypse for a month, but if the apocalypse still comes, that's a bad thing. And some states are trying to do it. I'm so suspicious of this, but supposedly, Governor Gavin Newsom of California announced earlier this week that his state had set aside $5.2 billion from federal aid packages to pay off the back rent of tenants who fell behind during the pandemic. So it's a version of what we were talking about earlier that so many states have been so slow in doing. Now, is $5.2 billion enough? I have no idea. How fast is the debt going to be cleared? I don't know. Is it going to be in time for the end of the moratorium? And again, the federal moratorium isn't the only one. Some states have moratoriums of their own, but some of those have already ended. And the only reason people haven't been kicked out is because thankfully the federal one has remained, and that's not long for this world.
Yeah, no, and I think that Governor Gavin Newsom's move in California is a really interesting one to study because it's been heralded by a lot of people. Obviously, it seems great, right? You're helping tenants who have back pay, and this is allowing, because before it was like, yeah, well, you gotta pay it eventually, and it's like, well, with what money, what job, what, well, you know what? But I do, you know, looking at some of the tenants' rights organizations and some housing rights organizations, they see this, the alleviation of the debt without a moratorium on evictions, because it's not coming with moratoriums on evictions. It's just, we'll help you with the back pay, yes, as essentially a handout to the real estate industry and a handout to landlords. Yes, there are mom and pop landlords. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not saying all landlords are evil. There are mom and pop landlords who rely on that money 100%. But a vast majority, especially in a highly unequal housing market like in California, are landlords and or investors who just have giant condos and who could afford to, you know, wait a little bit longer before they get their money. And so this essentially is helping landlords, and in many cases big landlords, and not actually helping people to save them from eviction because the eviction moratorium has not been extended. So that is an important distinction to make.
Yeah, no, it totally is. We'll be seeing, hopefully that group, you know, this is supposed to be what we have. We have 44, they're generally good on these issues, putting pressure. We'll see. Biden has backtracked in the past on a few things, you know, notably the refugee cap increase, a few other things. We'll see, we'll see. In any event, there's a lot of other news to get to. We are gonna take our second break, but when we come back, little bit to worry about and the new variant of COVID here in California and more news besides. What's Rudy Giuliani up to recently? What's going on with him? We're gonna find out after this. Okay, man, those breaks fly by. With that, let's jump back into the news. You've probably heard a lot about the Delta variant of COVID, and you will soon probably be hearing a lot about Delta Plus, the new, even more virulent version of it that's starting to spread. Much of the conversation, though, has occurred about what's going on overseas and a little bit of how it's starting to spread in states like Florida. Well, it turns out it's spreading a little bit closer to home as well. But let's catch you up a little bit on this and try to figure out how worried you should be about it. Well, experts say that this variant spreads more easily because of mutations that make it better at latching onto cells in our body. In the UK, for instance, the variant is now responsible for 90% of all new infections. It's the predominant case. Let's see, nationwide here in the US, between the 9th of May and the 22nd of May, the Delta variant comprised less than 3% of samples. By mid-June, that had risen to about 20%. And here in California, it's grown from about 1.8% of samples to 4.8% in May. So it's a little bit rarer here in California than in other states, but it is beginning to spread as well. And the good news, at least as of right now, is that based on a study in Scotland, the Pfizer and AstraZeneca vaccines offered 79% and 60% protection against infection from the Delta variant. So it is easier to catch it. And some reports have said it takes just a couple seconds of exposure, which is horrifying. But if you are vaccinated, as more and more people are in the United States, it isn't necessarily that much more risky. So Francesca, what are your thoughts? You've been seeing this start to spread.
I don't know, dude. I don't know. Go see a movie now while you can, man. I feel like we're just like watching a giant wave, you know, in the distance, and you're like, oh, it's really nice on the beach though. I don't know. It's like there's a little shark that's like dun 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 dun. But like in the beginning of the music, we can kind of hang. Yeah. Is that selfish of me to say that I just want to like a little like go to a movie, hug my mom one last time, and then I can shudder once again for another year? I feel like I'd be a better person. Actually, no, I'll go completely nuts if I have to be inside for another year.
It'll be entertaining though.
Oh my gosh, streaming. I'll finally get into video games. Maybe I'll perfect the one Mario jump because I'm terrible at them. I'm glad the Pfizer vaccine and the AstraZeneca vaccines are like very effective. And I'm interested in seeing the data on hospitalization rates and whether or not it is more likely, even though it's more infectious, whether it's more likely to land you in the hospital. It seems like as of now, no.
Exactly, yes.
So that's, I guess it's just, you know, viruses. Oh my gosh, I've been trying to understand them for a very long time now. But I believe they do mutate, cute. Mm-hmm. They become more infectious, very cute. But they also become less deadly, supposedly, as they continue. So a la the flu is not as deadly, although right wingers will have you believe that everyone's been dying from the flu. But as it mutates, and again, COVID may be endemic. It might just be a thing that we have to live with.
Yeah.
You know.
Unfortunately. I agree. I think it is spreading slowly here in the US, thanks in large part to the fact that we have gotten so many people vaccinated, at least to one jab. But by the way, especially with the variants, don't stop at one. Never stop at one. Don't ever do that. But if you were thinking about it, now you have even less reason to do it. But I agree, just in case, maybe get out there and do some fun stuff. I swear, if they pull Black Widow as a result of this, I'm going to lose my mind. And if I have to wait another year to watch the Bond movie, I'm going to lose my mind. But anyway, concerns over a possible re-lockdown are somewhat justified. Although bear in mind, we have vaccinated a lot of people. But in some countries, like in Israel, they have resumed their indoor mask mandate. So that's going to be returning. In Sydney, they're going to partial lockdown today. As a result of the Delta variant specifically. And so some states that had been, or some countries that had been very successful, and Australia had done a pretty good job, are having an issue with this new, more rapid spreading version. And now bear in mind, Australia has only vaccinated about 4% of their population fully. About a quarter have received one dose. So that's a much lower rate than the United States, but just understand the international situation there. Let's get into our last story of this first hour. Sophie's ready for it. I'm ready for it. Let's do it. Yesterday, Rudy Giuliani got a little bit of what's coming to him. Because of all of the spreading of nonsense about the election, not just, you know, on his podcast or on Fox News, but literally going before the courts and spreading obvious disproven misinformation about the election, he has at least temporarily lost access to his law license in New York. A court concluded that there is uncontroverted evidence that he communicated demonstrably false and misleading statements to courts, lawmakers, and the public at large in his capacity as lawyer for former President Donald J. Trump at the Trump campaign. His conduct immediately threatens the public interest and warrants interim suspension from the practice of law. It is, however, only temporary, so we will have to see what happens. But that said, we have now had time to get responses from Rudy Giuliani, as well as Donald Trump. So first, here is Rudy Giuliani's radio program, which is a thing apparently. Here is what he had to say.
They basically have suspended my practicing law, which I've done for 50 years without a single complaint, where I've prosecuted some of the most dangerous criminals, where I've had my life threatened several times in what I was doing. I think I have rendered significant service to this country. Most people will tell you that I had the most effective record in getting rid of the mafia. I think many people will tell you I was the best mayor in their lifetime. They suspended me and they wrote a lot of stuff. So you would think this would be like evidence, right? Isn't that what judges do, evidence? No. These are things that come from newspapers, CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times. What? Okay, It's called hearsay. Also, I think maybe we have to acknowledge that those are biased sources. They have not allowed me to answer a single thing. They haven't allowed me to speak. They haven't questioned me. And they say that the things they have here are uncontroverted. Of course they're uncontroverted. I haven't had a chance to controvert them.
Okay. So the stuff about it's coming from the media, it's the media was quoting him in speeches and in court documents. Like, it's still you, though. You still said that. He literally spoke at the Stop the Steal rally and called for a trial by combat. And maybe that was hyperbole or something, but he was there to whip people into a frenzy to overthrow the election because he had not succeeded in his dozens and dozens of legal attempts to do so already. So yeah, he's gonna be frustrated, I guess, the best mayor in our lifetime, Francesca, but I don't think he gets to be that shocked that there was finally this limited consequence for all of what he tried to do.
In his defense, I will say he is certainly not the first lawyer to communicate demonstrably false and misleading statements to courts, lawmakers, and the public at large. I mean, let's be real, not the best bunch of us, often lawyers are not. But yeah, I what are you gonna do? Slap on the wrist, I guess. I don't know.
It seems like it. What is he? Is he working as other than attempting to overthrow elections on behalf of Donald Trump? Does this really change his life? He hosts a radio show. He's not a working lawyer in that capacity anymore. No rational person was gonna hire him anyway. This seems like he's getting off pretty easy, I think. And by him, I don't even really care that much about Rudy Giuliani, but I'm just saying, like, I know a lot of people have been hoping that with all of the criminal acts of the last few years, that something more substantive would happen legally.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see it happening. This gets pointed out as a consequence because it exists in a void where there have been no consequences, and I think there are likely to be none, honestly.
No, for sure. Yes, it's a small mini consequence. I feel like they would have had more evidence if they'd been like, look, the man's drunk all the time and he tried to show his junk in a Borat film. So we're gonna make the bar look
his
really
alleged
bad.
Junk.
Allegedly, yeah. Tucking his shirt in. But I love how he's like, you know, I stopped the mafia until they offered me a job. And then I gladly joined them.
Yes. Now, he's not the only one that brought up the mafia or tried to make him out to be this amazing figure. Donald Trump actually spoke out in defense of someone that had been loyal to him. I honestly think that almost deserves a Nancy clap. He says, the greatest mayor in the history of New York City, the Elliot Ness of his generation, one of the greatest crime fighters our country has ever known, better than Batman. He's your friendly neighborhood lawyer, slinging webs. This is what the radical left does to him. Okay, Elliot Ness fought against Al Capone. Rudy Giuliani melted on camera. There are differences between these two people. Like, yeah, okay, I'm honestly impressed that he's defending him at all. But Rudy Giuliani, like, just host your show and just sell penis pills or whatever, like all the right wingers do. Like, do that
beet
grift.
Juice.
Just do your grift. Exactly. Stop trying to pretend that you're a real lawyer, you're gonna be a real politician or whatever. Honestly, Trump should just get a radio show too. You can make tons of money, it'll give you everything you want, attention and money. Anyway, any final thoughts in the last 30 seconds or so we have?
No, don't give Trump a radio show. Are you kidding me?
I will say
it is very disturbing to hear Rudy Giuliani that close up. You know, you just hear him in a small room and you wonder if he has his pants on and you wonder which closet it is. And let me just ASMR Rudy Giuliani. I've done nothing wrong.
He's farting COVID onto her right there. His face is melting. And that wasn't the worst moment for him last year. Jesus. Anyway, okay. So we have a lot more to get to. I'm still very worried about our ability to do it. So thank you to our linear audience for watching this first hour. Very much appreciate it. But there's a lot more coming for our Twitch and YouTube and members audiences. We've got more news. We've got garbage people. We're going to respond to some of your comments and more besides. You're not going to want to miss it. And so I'll see you in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.